Welcome to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Can books save us? As a person who absolutely loves to read, I could definitely say that there are a number of books that have helped me, motivated me, even changed me in some way. But have they saved me? This is what I was wondering about as I waited in line for the Sydney Writers' Festival Gala a couple of weeks ago. The gala was called, not surprisingly, The Book That Saved Me. So I'm in this massive queue outside Sydney Town Hall, waiting to go in and hear from a panel of famous writers. And I realised that I'm surrounded by readers, probably pretty devoted readers if they're at this event, who surely have a few stories of their own about how books have affected and maybe even saved them. So we thought we'd ask them. For festival goer Geraldine, the book that saved her was...
Yeah, it was The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. It's had an impact till now. I read it probably, I'd say 7 years ago, and I still regularly do daily pages and artist dates. So it might be going to a park and going for a long walk and just looking at the shapes in the trees, or going to a gallery that's got a new exhibition that interests you, or drawing with crayons instead of painting with paint, or can be anything. So it's a weekly activity that you do.
I remembered that you wanted to decorate all of the trees in the suburb.
Yes. Yeah, I did actually. I pinned notes on the trees with messages and to see who would then go and collect them, and it was like an experiment.
Others talked about books that had saved them in their professional lives.
I'm Connor. The book that changed my life is Letters to a Young Contrarian by Christopher Hitchens, which is basically a book of advice to rabble-rousers about how to go about causing trouble and to back yourself doing it. So I work as a journalist, so I have to challenge people with ideas and concepts and thoughts and difficult questions, and it's sort of renewed my confidence and ability to do that.
And some talked about books that had changed their lives, but not necessarily for the better.
I'm Vicky Mack, and I read a lot, and I just read A Little Life recently, and that did change my life in a way. It depressed me, actually, because it's so bleak, beautifully written. You wonder how much misfortune one character should have heaped upon them.
So there's a range of responses from some of the readers at the festival. But what about the writers? What light did the writers at the gala shed on this? There were people like Jeanette Winterson, who's a very loved writer. I've enjoyed at least one of her books. And the Booker Prize winner Marlon James, Kate Tempest, a few others. What did they have to say?
Yeah, it was a really interesting event, actually. There were six writers in total presenting on this theme, The Book That Saved Me. And they sort of embraced the theme, but they also had a bit of an ambivalence towards it, some of them. So Marlon James, he talked about Toni Morrison's novel Sula, and he was very strong on this. He described it as a real landmark in his life, so he could really mark before reading Sula and after reading Sula.
Yeah, Toni Morrison's novels do have that effect on people.
Yeah, I'm very ashamed to say that I have yet to read any Toni Morrison.
Shame on you.
She's on the list. Andrew Denton was another one of the writers. So he started out by saying that no book has ever saved me, except maybe The Complete Guide to Australian Fishing, which I once used to kill a huntsman. So that's kind of typical Andrew Denton. And he then went on to talk about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Jeanette Winterson was really interesting. She talked about how books for her have always been the way out. So that sounds, you know, a bit salvation-y.
Yeah, and in Jeanette Winterson's case, she really did need a way out. She had a very grim childhood, and she writes about very movingly about the way books kind of did save her in lots of ways. What about you, Natasha? What did you make of this idea that books have saved or had a significant impact on your life?
Reading is like one of my favourite things in the world. I was an English student forever, so really my default reaction to situations, you know, whenever I need to know something or want to be able to do something that I currently can't, I'm always like, okay, there must be a book that I can read on this topic. So I do have a lot of faith in books to change us. And there are loads that I could point to and be like, before this book, after this book, different times in my life. But I read a lot of C.S. Lewis growing up. So not only Narnia, but reading his Christian apologetic books, The Screwtape Letters and Mere Christianity, that kind of thing.
Yep.
But a few years ago, I read This is kind of unlikely for me, like it should be a fiction book. But actually, I read Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, which is about women and work and leadership and stuff. And I kind of read it reluctantly because we were reading it for book club and I didn't really want to. But it totally changed my life. Actually, I read it the week before I interviewed for this job and it gave me lots more confidence than I would otherwise have had.
Well, there you go. That's changed your life.
So what about you?
I was thinking about this. There's lots of books that I've loved, but I'm not sure how far I'd go in terms of, you know, whether it's saved or changed me particularly. I mean, I've loved books, lots of Tim Winton's books like Cloud Street. So yeah, they are sort of formative in lots of ways. Love Charles Dickens, love Tale of Two Cities, those sorts of things.
You're just showing off your literary taste here.
No, I don't know about that, but it's one that stands out is Eugene Peterson's book, Christ Plays in 10,000 Places, which was a kind of spiritual theology book. That really did affect me in the sense that he was able to sort of articulate the way in which God is present and active in the world, but maybe not in very conspicuous ways, but very powerful ways and glorious ways. Look for the glory is his kind of tag, I guess. That really did affect me.
Yeah, and I suppose for you and I, both being Christians, the impact of books does kind of come with the territory. You know, the Quran describes Christians as well as Jews as people of the book. Yeah, we're people who believe that God's revealed himself in this particular book, the Bible, and we'll be transformed by that as we read it, and that it's inexhaustible. Like you can spend a lifetime reading it and not get to the bottom of it. So I guess that entails quite a high view anyway of language and words and human engagement with the written word in general and what it can achieve.
Yes, it doesn't. You could sound a bit cliched there to hear the Christians saying the Bible changed their lives, but in a lot of ways it's absolutely true, and it is a sort of inexhaustible depth in that text. You could spend your lifetime in it and not get to the bottom of what it can offer you.
Of course, lots of people talk about kind of the saving quality of literature in other terms like empathy. You know, reading novels helps you to see things from other people's point of view, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I think jumping into heaps of literature, fiction can give you some of those skills, but I don't think that's the best reason to do it. I just think it's sort of occupying lives other than your own is a great reason to do that. So you can find out what it's like to grow up living in the Rockies in America or Sweden or some place very foreign to you, but not just foreign places, but foreign times, places in the past. It's a very sort of enriching, enlarging aspect of living. It's a great gift. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. And we're talking today about books and whether they can save us. So far, we've come to a sort of a conclusion that the answer is probably yes, in some sense at least, but there's more to it than just read this book and it'll solve all your problems.
Interestingly, though, I've been looking into the practice of what is called bibliotherapy, so kind of book therapy, and this was the overall theme of the Writers Festival this year. And while it was the first time that I'd heard this term, I discovered that it's actually quite an old concept. It's been around for a while, and it describes the practice of encouraging reading for therapeutic effect. So the first time the word bibliotherapy was used was in an article written by a Samuel Crothers for the Atlantic Monthly in 1916. And he describes bumping into an old friend called Bagster. I'm not quite sure I believe this is a real person because this just sounds like too good a story. So his friend Bagster is running this place that is called the Bibliopathic Institute. And Bagster welcomes patients into his office, which is located in the basement of his church. And he prescribes books to people to heal their ailments. So whether they're physical or mental or relational or existential.
He'll have a book for you.
That's right. So Bagster's quoted in this article as saying that, you know, a book may be a stimulant or a sedative or an irritant or a soporific. The point is that it must do something to you and you ought to know what it is. And then there's this great moment where he has to like hurry off mid-conversation to a patient who's taken an overdose of war literature to take care of him.
Yeah, I like that idea that you can come to this person, he's sort of the doctor who's going to find the right book for you. In a modern sense, brings up this concept of the self-help book, of which there is an enormous number. But this idea of providing therapy in the form of fiction is an interesting concept.
Yeah, and it wasn't a short-lived thing. The practice lives on. So Susan Elderkin is a modern-day bibliotherapist. She works at the School of Life in London. And she's written a book with another woman called The Novel Cure, an A to Z of literary remedies. It's like a dictionary. It has entries such as birthday blues under B, and it prescribes reading Salman Rushdie's Midnight Children as the cure for if you have birthday blues. A 40-minute bibliotherapy session with Susan Eldekin usually costs around £100, but she was offering complimentary sessions at the Sydney Writers' Festival this year. So we sent our intrepid producer, Karen Tong, to the therapist's office for a novel cure. And here's what happened.
Welcome, and make yourself comfortable on my lovely couch. You can lie down and go to sleep, put your feet up.
Susan Eldekin's bibliotherapist's office is in the corner of a wharf shed that's been converted into a bookshop for the Sydney Writers' Festival. It's set up like a typical therapist's office. I'm lying down on the couch. She's sitting in a therapist's armchair with a pen and notebook in hand. There's an antique writing desk in the corner strewn with stacks of books and pieces of paper, and a lamp in another corner glowing with a warm, dim light. The only noticeable differences are the curtains that take the place of walls and the noise. There's an event on in the next room and people bustling about the bookstore.
Well, Karen, maybe we should start by getting a sense of your reading taste, sort of books that you love to read. Are you a fiction reader by and large, or non-fiction?
So we talk about some of the books that I've read recently, the types of books I enjoy reading, but what I really want to know is whether she can prescribe a book to cure my nasty cold.
A book that I love to read and reread at those sort of moments is a book by Dodie Smith, who wrote a book called I Capture the Castle. It's an easy, lovely, eccentric, fun read, and good to lose yourself in when you've got a cold.
Awesome.
So what's going on for you in your life at the moment? Is there any big decisions that you've got to make, or are you preoccupied by anything in particular?
I guess I feel like in the past few years I've accumulated a lot of clocks that have ticked down or are ticking down, and so one of them would be, you know, things that you have to do before you're 25. 25 has come and gone, but now it's the things to do before you're 30 and that's coming up.
Right. So just reassessing where you are, whether you're fulfilling the potential of each stage of your life. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, basically. So if I sort of pulled it down to, you know, one specific example is I have a lot of friends who are having babies and it's beautiful. And so I play with their babies and have a great time with them. And every now and then there'll be someone else around and they'll say, "You're so good with children. You're so ready." And then something that I've never thought about, because I've never been in a stage of life where I've thought about having children, I'm suddenly thinking about that, so that adds another little clock to the collection.
Yeah, clock that one, yeah. It's an interesting predicament. I'm wondering whether it might be quite fun to give you a book crossing to safety, and it's written from the point of view of one couple as looking back at their lives, really. It's what defines a life at the end. Can be anything from having children to work and to friendships, and could be any of these things. So reading that might help you to discover where your priorities are as a person in terms of living a good and happy life. And then I guess to balance it out, we should really have a story about having a child and what that means. So one of the most moving portrayals of a parent-child relationship I know is The Road by Cormac McCarthy. And this is set in an apocalyptic future where something terrible has happened, which has totally kind of wiped out civilization as we know it. It's so undiluted by other stuff going on, you just get this very, very pure vision of what it is to have a child and to want the best for that child and to want that child to be okay. Okay, I'm going to put your element down as trying to establish your priorities in life in order to take the next step. There you
that
go.
That sounds about right.
Description. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So Karen, did it work?
Well, I think my cold was cured with, you know, vitamins and sleep.
Okay.
But I have bought the two books that she recommended, and we'll see what happens.
So, books as therapy.
Or at least adding to the richness and texture of life.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. We hope that you enjoyed this episode on bibliotherapy. For more conversations like this, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us. Next week, we're lingering at the Writers' Festival and bringing you a conversation with philosopher and author Julian Baggini. Join us then.